You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Get to people, yeah.
What are you gonna
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We Sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com. You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything is well with you today. Hope you're going to have a good weekend. Hope you're going to get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, the weather will be accommodating for you to do it. In certain parts of this country, boy, it's going to be seriously cold. Whew. So if you don't have to, don't. But hey, if you want to get out there and deal with it, do. I don't know, man. It's just ridiculous. Yeah, too cold. This is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You know, we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. From 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, brothers and sisters, you can go to the archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. And then you'll see programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. In fact, he's got to get over here, man. We got some work to do. Yeah. So, other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening. Once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. On Mondays and Wednesdays, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. in the evening, Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Mondays and Wednesdays from 7 to 9. Thursdays, the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club from 8 to 10 on Thursdays, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Thursdays, Brother Patrick Lumumba. Today, this evening, Friday, 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Sunday, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney, activist and Reverend Dr. Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney. And then after that, at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening, once again with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. The Inya Sisim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. January 16th. It is a woman that gives birth to a man. A Khan proverb. It is a woman that gives birth to a man. Excuse me. I'm sorry, family. The kind of a person a woman is, her character, her desires, aspirations, and dreams, her interpretation of reality are all reflected in the man she chooses as her complement. When a woman chooses a man and consistently works with him to remove all doubt as to his power, she is giving birth to a vision of her whole power. She is giving birth to a vision of her whole power. Without women, there is no men, biologically, emotionally, intellectually, or spiritually.
Without women, there is no men, biologically, emotionally, intellectually, or spiritually. It is in women that men see their reflection and are able to determine if they measure up to what they desire to be. Just as African women are defined and measured by their grandfathers, fathers, and brothers, African men are defined and measured up by their grandmothers, mothers, wives, and sisters. This is not a compliment, as some of the more insecure among us would argue. It is a compliment, and a divine one at that. When a woman is doing her work, the man she has selected has her compliment, who operates within the traditions of our ancestors, naturally develops in relationship to her defensive, survival, and emotional needs. If he is truly her man, he evolves in accordance with how she exercises her power, and he sees no threat to his manhood in creating a fence around her garden as strong and secure as she needs it to be. In fact, if he is indeed a man, he takes great pride in serving a woman who reflects his highest ideas. Ashe. Affirm, women are our center. Affirm, women are our center. January 17th. I believe it's better to die in battle rather than I believe it is better to die in battle rather than hold aloft a very revolutionary, a very pure banner, and then do nothing. Hugo Chavez. Yeah, Hugo Chavez, tough brother. Venezuela. War is about bloodshed, and any good warrior firmly committed to the liberation of his or her people knows that death is nothing less than an opportunity to seize in an effort to remove the threat to his or her people's ability to be themselves. War is not a sandbox for vainglorious cowards in need of attention for an unearned glory. It is not a platform upon which one makes grandiose declarations about freedom, revolution, and martyrdom. It is the place where one works to reach these ideas. So warriors, have faith in what you do now, here and now, right now, at this very moment. Not in what you have done or intend to do. Now that we are winning and that there is no room for doubt, for doubt drains. Advance. Never accept your current position as a resting place. Never stop until you have become your ancestors in all their glory.
This call may be goodness, recorded or transcribed.
Goodness and splendor, and have returned the African reality to power. Ashe. Affirm, I do not make excuses. Affirm, I do not make excuses. January 18th. The psychopath is an individual who is consistently in conflict with others, other persons or groups. He is unable to experience guilt, is completely selfish and callous, and has a total disregard for the rights of others. I know you just heard that last week. That's from the Psychopathic Racial Personality, the most outstanding essay by Dr. Bobby Eugene Wright. Dr. Bobby Wright. Psychopathic Racial Personality. The voices they hear in their heads are not aliens, demons, or the devil. There's nothing strange or foreboding about those who speak to their minds from the inside. They are their ancestors instructing and prodding them in their way. Every people hear their ancestors urging them to be themselves. Every people receives some degree of internal guidance about being what they have always been. And the external socialization is never enough to cause individuals to feel compelled to carry forth their legacy, whatever it may be. And the European legacy is a hunger for victims, in the most depraved and sadistic of ways. Their record is incontestable. Insanity courses through their veins. Death gives them light, life, unlike others who are given life through life. They search for life, emotional content, through psychic shocks. The greatest rush comes through the giving and receiving of trauma. And the greatest trauma is death. This is why they are master sadistics and born killers. Sometimes because we are being socialized in the insanity of their ancestors and have become distant from the wisdom and urgings of our own, we hear their ancestors' voices and we mistake them for our own. Affirm, I do not listen to the voices of psychopaths. Affirm, I do not listen to the voices of psychopaths. Brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesem of daily revolutionary thought. My brothers and sisters, how everyone is doing out there? Yeah, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Today is a special day for me because one is the birth date of a hero of mine, an iconic person who I've idolized pretty much my whole life. And the other is a man who I've had the utmost respect and as a true warrior and Pan-Africanist. Today's the birth date of Muhammad Ali. And today was the day that Patrice Lumumba was assassinated in the Congo. So we're going to talk about those two individuals. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832 and tell us how you feel about those two individuals. We'll try to find some things on the net. And, of course, in Wikipedia, I'm going to bring some stuff up out of there. And whatever else we got to do to make the flow go. You know? Yeah. So. So, Muhammad Ali, like I said, a man who I have has had deep respect and admiration for. And I'm going to talk about how Muhammad Ali, how I became connected. When I was a kid, you know, me and my brother, you know, we too high, yellow, curly haired dude that people would mess with. You know? I never considered myself anything but being African or colored, I guess, at that time, or Negro, and later in the mid to 60s and beyond, black. And then, of course, being American African or African American, and then American African, no, just, I'm an African. Yes, I'm an American African because I was born here in America. Yeah. Yep. Remember, Africa's the noun. We are all Africans. African is the noun. A noun denotes a person, place, or thing. You know? And so we're Africans, and the word that goes in front of it describes what that person, place, or thing is, what kind of African you are. So if you were born here, you're American African. If you was born in Jamaica, Jamaican African. Born in Brazil, Brazilian African. Born in the Congo, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, you'd be a Congolese African. Ghanaian African. Nigerian African. Namibian African. You got the picture. Muhammad Ali, born on this day in 1942. Passed away June 3rd, 2016. Yeah. Remember that day very deeply when I got the message. I was in my room at Dillard University at our program in New Orleans, the EDI program in New Orleans. That program is where we teach firefighters from around the country and literally around the world how to be chief officers, how to run fire departments, how to be company officers. Good firefighters. We don't do training on fire protection and so forth, but we talk about management. So I was there, and then I knew I got to leave early because I know his service was not going to be, a week or two away. And so I started making plans and called my dear friend, Mary Felder. And she was already in Mississippi at the time because it was all I know because Mary, Mary drove me down here. Me, Mary, and her then husband who passed away. The three of us and their dog. I think the two dogs. Was, I don't know. One dog for sure because one dog we had to hunt down when we made a stop. And so finally she dropped me off here in Atlanta and she carried on to Mississippi. So we were talking and she is going to go to the service in Louisville, Kentucky. Louisville, I mean, just make sure I get that right. Otherwise my lady's going to jump down my throat. Louisville, not Louisville, not Loserville, but Louisville. And so, I've met Muhammad Ali or seen Muhammad Ali three times in my life. On the streets in Milwaukee, near Muhammad's Mosque number 3, at the Indiana Black Expo. In the Indiana Black Expo, there is a boxing tournament that goes on during the expo in his name, in his honor. And that one day he was there. Yeah. I tell you, that was just a dynamic expo, man. One I'll never forget in my life. All the things that I was exposed to and things that I did. I had lunch with Dr. John Henry Clark. I literally sat at the feet of an African-centered master teacher. This is real. Khalid Abdul-Muhammad was there. Tupac Shakur was there. I'm telling you, it was just... Man. Of course, the new Jack Scholars, Greg Kamathi Carr, and many people know him, but Dr. Greg Carr, Mario Beatty, his wife, Delethia. Yeah, man, just fantastic. What an expo, man. I thank our ancestors and for making sure that I got there and the things that I was exposed to. But at the boxing tournament, there was Muhammad Ali again. And then the third time, a friend of mine, we went to Louisville to Muhammad Ali's center. And I'm in there, and you can do simulators. And I was doing had to take your shoes off to get into the ring and do some shadow boxing. That's what I was doing. And she came in. Oh, she, hurry up, come on. So I gathered up my shoes, and then there he was, Muhammad Ali. He had just had an operation. You could see a scar down the back of his neck. He wasn't trembling as bad as he has been, you know, I guess. And I hugged him, kissed him, and told him I loved him. Didn't have a cell phone, family, so I didn't take that picture that would be the screensaver for the rest of my life. In fact, my niece sent me a text. My uncle's favorite. My uncle's iconic favorite. The birthday of my uncle's iconic favorite. Yeah. My uncle's idol. Muhammad Ali. And so when I was young and me and my brother, you know, like I said, how we looked and so forth, people would mess with us, you know. We had a paper out one time and We got jumped. I don't know. I think it was just to the point that we were fed up with, you know, getting our ass kicked or people challenging us, that we decided, because we really didn't get our ass kicked off, and you know, we fought back. But we decided that we were going to learn how to box, learn how to truly defend ourselves. And so we ordered a boxing book, and it was what was interesting. The damn book was so old, the pages were yellow. And they were like bare knuckle fighting, you know. But we used that, and we began to practice with each other, you know, keeping our hands up, throwing a jab, which my shoulder would hit my tongue, hit my chin, so I wouldn't be susceptible to overhand right and hitting my chin and knocking me out or whatever. So we'd go back and forth, you know, on right hands and everything like that. And so my mother recognized what was happening, you know, because, I mean, my brother, you know, this cat was trying to fight my brother all the way home, man, all the way to the house from about a little less than a mile. And then there was one cat that wanted to fight me, this cat named Homie Banks. Big slope head, dude. I ain't lying, man. Cat had a sloped head, you know? And he had these big-ass hands. I wasn't going to come out the house and put them hands on me. No, sir. Call me what you want, but I ain't the one. So, you know, but then we said, hey, man, we got to defend ourselves. And the Salvation Army was right up the street, less than a block away. And even though they didn't use the locker room that much for any too much of anything. So me and my brother, my mama got us some gloves. We went to the Sal, threw those gloves down. Who won the thump? I kid you not. And there he boxed before I did, a year before I did. And then I came out the following year. He didn't win in the Golden Gloves. I did from my weight class. I was bigger than my brother at the time. You know, he fought welterweight. I fought middleweight. I fought 156, close to 165 as middleweight, and he fought 147, which is welterweight. And, you know, I continued to box when he didn't. I went to Ace Boxing Club, a Native American named Del Porter, and his father and his son, man. And I really appreciate Dale. I got a chance to go to a number of places, particularly in the Midwest, Ottawa, Illinois. In fact, I fought for the championship in the AAU in Ottawa, Illinois. I lost to a brother in East St. Louis. But I had knocked his friend out. My first real knockout. I knocked his friend out the week before, you know. And so, yeah. My record was 14-2. I lost two fights. I lost that one to him. And I lost another fight when I wasn't in any kind of good shape. I looked bad, you know. In fact, at the end of the fight, the three rounds, I'm hanging on the ropes, you know. I'm just And so I got in shape, and I avenged that fight. I whooped that cat's ass so bad. He couldn't put a – I was a boxer. I wasn't a fighter. I didn't go out there, you know, fighting. And I'd seen a piece from Muhammad Ali saying who he felt was the only cat that could beat him, you know. And he said Mike Tyson. And I know him and Mike Tyson had a mutual respect and love for one another. And he said Mike Tyson, I don't know, you know. No, I do know. Nobody could beat Muhammad Ali because he was different. He was a true boxer. He wasn't a fighter. He wasn't a slug. He was a dancer. Before he had to give up his championship, right after the Zora Foley fight, and I seen that Zora Foley fight. That was on a weekday. I'm not sure if it was a Tuesday or Wednesday, but I saw the fight at the Franklin Boys and Girls Club. It was on TV. It was on TV. And we had a game, a basketball game. At the Franklin Place Boys and Girls Club. And I saw that fight. That was the last fight until he gained his title back. Not his title, but the right to fight again, because he had vacated. They made him vacate the title, you know. And through a process, a tournament, Joe Frazier had the title. You know, he beat Muhammad Ali's former sparring partner, Jimmy Young. And I got into boxing, and I wasn't bad. Like I said, 14-2, I wasn't bad. But boxing is a kind of serious commitment, man. Unlike any other sport, the dedication, but you have to really do it. And so I fell in love with Muhammad Ali. I really did. I loved the kind of man that he was. And let me tell you, I really loved him when he embraced the Nation of Islam. You know? Because then, you know, he was really fearless. He was really fearless. You know? And he was telling these folks, these crackers, no. You're my opposer. You're my opposer when I want freedom. Yeah. Oh, man, I tell you, Muhammad Ali. You know, I remember on Phil Donahue's show, this white woman got up there and she said, I don't like you. No, you don't like me because of the way I'm talking. You know, you used to docile Negroes. That's the problem. That's what you don't like. You know, that's what he was saying. Yeah. 10 things every boxing fan should know about Muhammad Ali. Because he transcended boxing. He became a global icon. The first 3-time champion. Like I said, his athleticism as a boxer, he would have beat everybody. They did a simulation thing that pissed me off. You know, that they had Rocky Marciano beating him. But then it pissed me off, but then I didn't understand it then. But I truly understand it now. Because Marciano, you know, was a Caucasian. He was undefeated. And the whole idea, even with Jack Johnson family, if you remember, there's a documentary called Unforgivable Blackness. The documentary is called Unforgivable Blackness. Go to YouTube. There I go again. Go to YouTube. Unforgivable Blackness. Jack Johnson. And how they searched for a great white hope, which of course led to a play with James Earl Jones, who recently became an ancestor. You know, the great white hope. And still they wanted that great white hope. They couldn't let it go. So no, they couldn't have Muhammad, even in assimilation, Muhammad Ali beating Rocky Marciano. He would beat the shit out of Rocky Marciano. In their prime, Marciano wouldn't lay a glove on him. I think the reason why I'm saying all of this and the way I'm saying it, even with Mike Tyson, Muhammad Ali realized he could take a punch. That might be because, and I'm going to say this too, there are more cats that took more punches than Muhammad Ali. There are many more fighters that took, and Archie Moore took a lot of punches. He was over 100-some fights. Sugar Ray Robinson. Why Ali developed Parkinson's and his voice was silent? Because he had a strong voice. I'm just saying. But he would have beat him. He would have beat Marciano. He would have beat Mike Tyson. Too short. Ali was too smart. And when he realized he could take a punch, he was already too fearless. I mean, I know many people were so afraid of the rumble in the jungle. Not so much of the gorilla in Manila. Because, you know, he had really been the first fight. And I hated that first fight because I was so pissed that Ali was playing with Joe Frazier. And then, of course, Joe Frazier hit him with that left hook in the 14th round. They went 15 rounds back at the time. They only do 12 now. Knocked my man down. And I knew he was going to lose the fight. Man, I just wish I could have saw it. Why? I heard some of it. In fact, one of the first fights I heard was the one that he fought Liston and took the crown on radio. Yeah. Yep. So he would have beat Mike Tyson. You know how cats in basketball now, they be, you know, going, you know, showing their hands out the way too low. Ali would have did that. Too small. Ali was 6'3". You know, sculptured, man. Hands fast as lightning. He would have outpointed Tyson. And I know, the admiration and respect they gave each other. Because, in fact, Tyson said to Ali, because, you know, Ali shouldn't have took that fight with Larry Holmes. He looked good. He did some things make him look good, but he couldn't fight. And he took a pounding. And I was over at my uncle's house, and he was, Uncle Jerry, he was like pissing me off because he had, he was pulling for Holmes to beat Ali's ass. And he did, you know. But Ali in his prime against any heavyweight, then, now, and I venture to say in the future, Ali would beat him. His athletic prowess was undeniable, marked by his speed, agility, and powerful punches. However, Ali's impact extended far beyond the ring. Ali transcended. He transcended sports. He was the most known fighter, the most known person. Muhammad Ali became the most known person in the world. In the world. And I'm not going to say this one because it might bring tears to my eyes on the radio program. When he saw that little boy who had cancer. And he said, I'm going to beat him. I'm going to beat him for you and you're going to beat cancer. The little boy said, no. He said, I'm going to be God. And I'm going to tell him I met Muhammad Ali. Sorry, family. Let me get myself composed here. He said, I'm going to tell him I met Muhammad Ali. That's the kind of person he was. He had deep compassion as a Muslim, but not as a Muslim, as a man, as a human being. He was so charitable. And he was a righteous man. Okay, yeah, he had his wives and he did what he did. But he took care of all of his children. He was a vocal advocate for civil rights, religious freedom, social justice, using his platform to challenge racial inequality and oppose the Vietnam War. His stance against the Vietnam War became the reason why he lost his title and then later through the Supreme Court regained it. His conversion to Islam and name change further solidified his commitment to his beliefs. Ali's charisma, unwavering principles made him an inspirational figure who captivated the world and left an enduring legacy as one of the most influential athletes and activists in history. Muhammad Ali is a name that transcended sports, arguably the greatest of all time. His life and career were celebrated inside and out the ring. Ali's whole heart commitment to boxing was somehow matched by his humanitarian work and voice for a greater good of humanity. Ali was loved by fans from around the world during his boxing career. After his passing in 2016, his legacy continued to live on, from iconic quotes to legendary photos. The greatest will be remembered, Ashe, for a long time. Yeah, Louisville, Kentucky. Though DNA testing was not found that Ali's great-great-grandfather was a former slave, Archer Alexander. Alexander was the subject of a William Greenleaf Elliott as an abolitionist in a book called The Story of Archer Alexander from Slavery to Freedom. He was the model of a freed man for the Emancipation Memorial located in Lincoln Park in D.C. Ali was born, of course, Cassius Marcellus Clay Jr. He was named after his father. And, of course, Cassius Marcellus Clay is a very famous Caucasian as well. He got his name. Yep. Muhammad Ali was born in Louisville, Kentucky. And on this day, 1942, his parents were Cassius Clay Sr. and Odessa Clay. Cassius grew up in Louisville with four brothers and a sister. He was raised in an era of racial segregation. He struggled as a student due to dyslexia and had a hard time reading and writing, which carried onto his adulthood. And at age 12, he took up the sport of boxing by chance because somebody stole his bike. He was pissed. I'm going to find him, and I'm going to get my bike, and I'm going to beat it. Yeah. So they stole his bike near a gym where the police athletic league. And so a police officer told him, "Well, hold on, don't do nothing stupid, man. But you got to learn how to do this." So he chilled Ali out, and Ali began to work out to become a boxer. And he won the Golden Gloves, the 1960 Rome Olympics, where he's hitting on my... on my girl, Wilma Rudolph. Oh, Wilma Rudolph. Beautiful sister. Ali. In 64, he changed his name right after the fight. Right after the Liston fight. The first one where he won the title. You know. And then, of course, many people had a hard time. It really wasn't no hard time, but they, you know, didn't want to call him Muhammad Ali, you know. Ernie Terrell was out of Chicago, and the fight was in Chicago. That's the fight where he was whooping his ass. I mean, what's my name, you know. Yeah. He was introduced to the Nation of Islam. He converted after being listed in 64. Was given to him. The name Muhammad Ali was given to him. The name Ali Most High. And Ali, no, Muhammad Most High and Ali, the servant of Allah. Yeah. So, I'll tell you. Even though he had a fear of flying, he visited over 50 countries throughout his career. And even after that, as an ambassador, he helped get the hostage freed. He saved a man who was going to jump. I mean, Muhammad Ali is extraordinary, brothers and sisters. Muhammad Ali is extraordinary. He's somebody who I really admire. And that's what started me boxing. Aside from the neighborhood, better have to defend yourself. But, man, he came along at the right time. You know, because that's the kind of fighter I was. I was a dancer, and I'm trying to in the ring and move and so forth. Jab, stick, and move. I didn't do the antics of Ali. No, I didn't do that. You know. But I was a boxer. I gave you a side and a jab and hook. And just trying to be smart. Trying not to get hurt. You know. Yeah. So I'm going to tell you, we're going to talk about Patrice Lumumba after the break. Be coming on a break shortly. If there's something you want to, you know, say something about Muhammad Ali, give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Brother Irv, how you doing, my brother?
Baba Oshie, can you hear me?
I can hear you, my friend.
Baba. Oh, good, good, fantastic.
Yeah.
Wow, this is, you got me over here. You got me over here sniffling because I adore Muhammad Ali also. And I hear the passion in your voice when you speak about him.
Yeah.
And when you look at his life as a whole, and not just parts of his life, when you look at the whole journey that he took from the time I heard about Muhammad Ali to the time he passed away, this man was, his life was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Yeah, yeah, it's like a roller coaster. Yeah. It went way up and came crashing all the way down. And when he gave into his conviction, now, you know, believe me, organized religion is not my bag. But when you find something that works for you,
right?
In other words, when I don't put people down, man. I believe me, I grew up in a Christian household. My mother and father were Baptists, and that was it. Wasn't no other religion. That's what we did, and here's right. what we do. And Ali gravitated to Islam, and he tried to be the best Muslim that he could be. And he was very good at it. He promoted it very well. I mean, they had their fights between in their internal battles, you know, with Malcolm X and with other leaders. But that was their thing, and he was good. He was a great ambassador for the sport of boxing, an ambassador for the religion of Islam, and also for Africans. Because I've heard Muhammad Ali say some things to white people that would have pretty much got an iron ore put around your neck and throw you in the river for saying, or you, at the least, you would have lost your job, your ability to take care of yourself. And that's why a lot of people don't speak Baba Oshie, because I don't want to lose my job, my chance of promotion.
Right.
You know,
right.
We have to, the people who are hold your purse strings, you can't get them so upset or they will do something emotional. Will cut off, you know, stop you from working there, even though you're a valued employee. It's not about you, what you can do. It's about my emotions, about you saying something that pissed me off. So we as a people have, as long as we live here in this country and live under someone else's culture and live within this racism, white supremacy, that is real. We have to not get these people upset. But Ali was a bright light in the ocean, man. I'm telling you, you saw him, you knew that he was not going to bow down.
That's right.
You knew that he.
That's right.
On. You knew he was going to stand straight up, and he wanted you to stand straight up with him.
That's right.
And I heard him say this, especially to the Europeans, when he went overseas and started talking to David Frost and all these types of racist white folks to try to come across as they so liberal and they want all us to live together, but they living good and you still catching the bus to work. He don't even go to work. He created, because the European creates their job. We're taught to get a job.
Right.
The European is taught to create a job. And that's the mindset. That's the mental slavery that we're in. So we're changing that now because we understand. And when we start, and when I come back, I'm going to get off and let someone else talk. But when I come back and talk about Patrice Lumumba, then you're really going to see a true nationalist.
Right.
I mean, a person.
Oh, yes.
I mean, this guy died at 35.
Right.
Patrice Lumumba just lived, didn't see 50, didn't see the years that I've seen. Thank God. And when you put Patrice Lumumba together with Muhammad Ali, if you could
put
them together and make one person,
my goodness, that's a deeply extraordinary human being with the kind of mindset that he would have. And the physical abilities that Muhammad Ali brings, oh man, it's just dynamic.
Come on. It would look similar, and I'm going to stop after this. It would look similar to Ibrahim Touré.
That's right.
If you ever look at Ibrahim Touré from the Burkina Faso, he's a Pan-Africanist.
Right.
So therefore, he has a nationalist in him. And when he walks, every time you see a picture of him, you never see him in a European suit. You never see him on with his GQ three-piece suit on and his gaiters. You never see that. You see him in military gear, face clean shaved, and standing straight up with a sidearm on his hip and ready to fight for his freedom. He's always in a fighting stance.
That's right.
Because Irugu never stops fighting. He uses you to fight against each other. So Ibrahim embodies Muhammad Ali. He embodies Patrice Lumumba. He embodies everything that you want in a true leader, not leading blacks, but a leader, someone you can look at and emulate, because what they do is something you look at him and say, that's what I would have said. Oh, man, because I used to watch Ali. My father hated Ali for passion. He wanted Ali to lose. Because he talked too much.
Right.
He
refused. He talked too much. He refused to be a part of American government. Refused to go into the war in Vietnam.
Everything that you did, he ain't doing, and he's making you think about what you did and say, you know what, you're right. And then he would back it up.
Yeah.
He would back it up. And see, he didn't. It wasn't about loyalty. It was about consistency. Ali never ever turned around and said, "Well, you know, said all that stuff back in the 60s, but I really didn't mean it." He never did that.
No.
Everything he said, he stood by.
That's right. He stood on it.
He stood by because I've never seen him read from a paper.
Mm-mm.
And everything I saw him do came out of his head.
That's right.
You know,
all the poems,
comes out
all the
mouth.
Poems. Like, you know, when he first came out, you know, all the poems and stuff, all the braggadocio, all the hyperbole. I loved it. I loved it, man. You know. But I really loved it when he came, you know, when he got with the Nation of Islam and spoke with the kind of courage to anybody and everybody about his stance, his beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
He had tremendous courage, man. You know, he could not be bought. You know,
he wasn't chicken shit.
He was a strong man for his belief.
He gave the young people something to look up to.
Yes.
And he gave the older people a sense of hope. If you notice, the one thing that Rugu uses against American actors is the words of hope. And you know, I have the audacity to hope. That's the book that Obama put out.
Yeah.
Or
right.
Obama
that was his book. What is the audacity of hope? That's right.
or Jesse Jackson. I want to go out where the big ships are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do nothing. Either I am doing it or I'm not doing it. But stop giving me tomorrow. And I think everything in this country for the American African is based on tomorrow. You know, tomorrow we're going to get you your loan. Tomorrow we'll make sure you get a house. Tomorrow we'll give you that job. Mm-hmm. I don't want tomorrow. And as a matter of fact, I don't even want to ask you for anything.
Yeah.
You know how much it hurts me to ask a white person for anything? Anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because that to me, it seems like I just give them the power. I just give them the power over me. You know, I got you that job because you asked me for that job. I didn't ask you. It is just that simple. It is just, and if you notice, Baba Oshie, I'm not talking about you calling me the N-word. I'm not talking about you being, man, ain't no black people on TV. I could give a damn.
Right.
What I care about is my people. Are my people, do my people have sovereignty? Do my people have self-determination? Are we moving towards our liberation? Are we moving towards, is this a revolution or is this a coup? That's for another day. But Robert Oshie, do the break. I'm gonna come back after the break. You got a minute. You know, I'm watching the clock, man.
Right on. Right on, brother. Appreciate you, brother.
Let's do it.
Love you,
tomorrow. All right, I'm 35. Right. Yes, sir.
Yeah, brother. It's Muhammad Ali. The greatest, truly, if you talk about the GOAT or the greatest of all time, he's the one that really coined that back way back. I'm the greatest of all time. And he is, and he was, and he will always be. He was unique. He was unique. He was a world figure. the world figure. Brothers, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about another warrior, another man who believed that we as African people should not fall under the dominance of anybody outside of us. And he lost his life for it. And which is ironic, because the rumble in the jungle, Zaire, is the Congo that this man was about. And the Belgium Congo. I even hate to say that, man. The Belgium Congo. Think of Leopold and how evil that son of a bitch was. You know? Yeah. Man, I tell you. We're going to take a break. We come back from the break. We're going to take these. Go talk about Patrice Lumumba. And then, of course, get your questions, comments, or concerns. My break today, I'm going to play some soundtracks, two of my favorite soundtracks I played before. You heard them. One is from Claudine, Gladys Knight. And, you know, that's a great soundtrack. It is a great soundtrack. Many of the songs, but To Make Yours a Happy Home, one of the lead songs from it. And the other one is going to be Car Wash, Rolls Royce. So, right now, you're listening. Hold on, let me do this. Let me do this right here. This here, here. All right, family, we'll be right back.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshie on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Run away, 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 run away
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Yeah, two of my favorite. I know I seen Car Wash on a Friday, and I remember that when I went to theater, went to the movie to see that. I'm not sure what day I seen Claudine. Both excellent movies, a lot of fun, but the great soundtracks. Love soundtracks. Probably bring a couple other soundtracks up in the next weeks or so, whatever. This is African Perspectives, and we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. Hope you can listen. On this day, January 17th, in 1961, Patrick Lumumba was assassinated. He was killed. He had the courage of many. I shouldn't say many. He had the courage of some of the. Yes, that's maybe a better term, because I wish it was many who had the courage to stand up to colonialism and neo-colonialism. And despots and other fools to do what's right for Africans to control their land and to control their resources. Now we know that the most mentally rich country on the continent is the one that's in the middle of the continent, the Democratic Republic of Congo. The continent is continuously rich in mineral resources, and it has been plundered, and theft has been going on for centuries. Centuries. Europe is what it is because of Africa. If it were not for Africa, Europe would not have the wealth, would not have the gold bullion, the diamonds. The European Jews who dominated and controlled the diamond industry would not have that if it were not for South Africa and Africa, period. There's nothing in Israel. There ain't a damn thing in Tel Aviv. And you see they bombed the shit out of Gaza. And about to do the same thing to the West Bank. But these Europeans would have nothing if it were not for Africa. And what they do is play us against each other. If they don't kill us outright themselves. Yeah. Patrick Lumumba. He was born June 24th, he was in office. He was born July 2nd, 1925. And he was murdered. He was assassinated this day in 1961. First Prime Minister of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Not very long. From June until September of 1960. Following the May 1960 election, he was the leader of the Congolese National Movement from 1958 until his assassination in 61. Ideologically an African nationalist and a pan-Africanist, he played a significant role in transformation of the Congo from a colony of Belgium to independent republic. they were slicing up that cake, that African cake. And at the Berlin Conference in Germany. And everybody's getting their piece. Little tiny ass Belgium got the jewel. And Leopold of Germany. He thought it was his personal. I mean, he was so vicious. So many millions of people were killed. Hands cut off. They would sell chocolate. But you know, cocoa comes out of Africa, so it's not European. Oh, yeah, okay, I know. I know Nestle's and Cadbury and all those other Swiss chocolate, Swiss, Belgium chocolate, England. I know. They used to make chocolate hands because he would cut off hands if you didn't produce whatever quota that they had that you had to produce and feet. He was a sadistic son of a. That's why, to me, you know, when we talk about to be repaired for what it's done, how we are today, when you look at the African world and when you look at Africa, period, and how poverty stricken it is still. And the only reason, family, I don't give a damn who you can put up on this microphone or who you can put up at a conference or whatever. The only reason, they can come up with all the kind of bullshit. The only reason that it is that way is because Africans lack the unity. And the reason why we lack the unity, because we don't have the mind. We can blame ourselves, and I know many of us do. There are many of us who blame ourselves. And to some extent, I understand it. You should be able to think outside of the imposed boundaries. You should be able to release that vice grip that the European, the Caucasian, the Urugu, the cracker has on our minds. I understand that. We should. And if we are to be a people to have the respect of ourselves and each other and the world, we must. We have to. And we can't look for anybody outside of us. As Dr. Clark said, we have no friends. We have no friends. You want a friend? Look in the mirror. And don't leave that mirror till you like what you see. Not the cleft in your chin or the dimples in your cheeks or your arched eyebrows. No, like who you see historically, who you see culturally, like your dark skin. Your deep melanated skin, thick lips, broad nose, like it, love it. And like those who are like you. Love ourselves, love each other before anybody outside of us. We have everything we need. We have the mental capabilities. It's all there. We have the ability to transfer, just like the Arabs transformed, and you can see how deep it is, transformed the desert in Arabia, in Saudi Arabia, and other parts of the desert-stricken so-called Middle East of Oman, Qatar, United Arab Emirates. And that was done because they controlled the oil. Oh, I know the European wanted to do that. I know a Standard Oil, a Rockefeller's wanted, but no. See, they didn't have that situation that we fell under, that we succumbed to. They had nothing. So European wasn't messing with them outside of Lawrence of Arabia. No, they didn't realize under those desert sands, the amount of oil that it was there. And then they brought people in. Arabs weren't doing that. They didn't do that construction. They brought people in from around the world. Serious architects from around the world. And their pockets were deep. So whatever the idea was, whatever the plan was, it could be implemented. We could, our riches are far greater than theirs. Far greater. But unfortunately, we don't control them. Europeans control them. European Jews control them. To this day. That's why you got to support. You got to feel for what the brothers is doing in Burkina Faso. Ibrahim, you know, Traoré. What the brothers are doing in Chad and Mali and Niger and Senegal, hopefully in Ghana, hopefully everywhere else. I know the Nigerians just cut a deal with the French, and one of the persons that did it, he's big in oil in Nigeria. He is. Poverty in Nigeria is sickening. The filth and squalor is sickening. It is, family. Lagos is so damn bad that they had to create another Abuja. And I'm not sure how Abuja looks. Yes, I agree. The root is the Caucasian, but there's things that we can do, that we must do, that we can't blame on anybody but us. And I know the reason they're at the root of it, but still, we must break the monopoly that the European has on our mind. We can't even think outside of those. We can't. There are some of us who can and who do. Yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you. Yeah, rest in power, Patrice Lumumba, who was assassinated on this day. He was a radical African leader in the Congo. He resisted European colonialism. He resisted European colonialism. God bless the souls of the liberators. This is Joint Reed. God bless the souls of the liberators who refuse to fear the powerful and the wicked. Ashe. Ashe. They refuse to fear anyone. They were guided by our ancestors. They heard the voice of our ancestors and they moved. So remember this day, Muhammad Ali and Patrice Lumumba. Muhammad Ali's birthday and the assassination day of Patrice Lumumba. There are many other brothers and sisters who came in the name of some of those ants like Thomas Sankara. Thomas Sankara of Burkina Faso, who was murdered, who was assassinated. We must develop within our people, particularly our children. The liberating mindset, the sovereignty mindset. That is our responsibility. Yes, you can send your kids to the school at the corner, the public school, the parochial school, the choice or charter school. Of course, the best places to send your children is to the independent, African-centered school. But if you send your kids to any of those schools, you also must teach him or her the history of our people. I said this many times about the European Jews. The European Jews will send their kids to the public school. My daughter, there was a program called Chapter 220, which allowed, quote, inner city, allowed American African children to attend suburban schools. And of course, money came with their attendance. So those suburban schools got some. They didn't do this like, well, you know, we got a good program here. We have the finest of facilities and this, that, and the other. Then, you know, the inner city schools have. So you just come on. We'll take some of you. No. A deal was made. You take some of these kids and we'll give you this. So my daughter went to a school. And a lot of European Jews went to that school. And what they told that school is said, hey, we're not going to be here on this day because this is Yom Kippur. This is Rosh Hashanah. This is Hanukkah. We ain't going to be here. As a consequence, that school, you know, they didn't have school at that time. But the European Jew didn't tell them, I want you to teach us about what it means to be a European Jew. About my history, about my ancestors. Blah, blah, blah. No. Just teach me science, math, some social studies, English, foreign language. No. Yes. Give that stuff to me. But what it means to be a European Jew, that is our responsibility. We'll learn that in the synagogue or in a center. We'll learn that. It should be the same way with us. The public schools, make sure you do a good job in teaching us math, science, and other related subjects. But when it comes to learning about being an African, that is our responsibility to teach them culturally, our history, our struggle, our sense of possibilities, our future. That is ours. Imagine if Africans here in the diaspora, I mean, I'm talking about Africans in the diaspora. I ain't talking just the United States. I'm talking about all of us in Brazil, in the Caribbean. We're getting this knowledge, this historical knowledge, and we're linking it back to our homeland. We have a homeland. We have a foundation. We have all that we need, imagine, and we start to go there and do what's necessary and do it. Imagine. All right. Okay. Brother Irv, good afternoon. Brother Irv, are you there? Okay.
Well,
hey, my brother, how you doing?
Can you hear me, Baba?
I got you. Go ahead. Yep.
Brother, when you said imagine, you said something too that made me think. I just wanted to say it. When you say all of the American Africans, all the Africans in the diaspora come together, Baba Oshi, that's what's happening now. That's what the internet. That's the Trump card here is the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because the Trump card, the internet gives you information. And what is the one thing that Arugu is afraid of. Mm-hmm. Arugu is afraid of information. He called it his story. We call it the truth. And you don't. He doesn't want the truth to come out. The truth is he did hide things. The truth is Arugu is an imperialist. The truth is the IMF ain't giving you fair loans. The IMF are giving you enslavement loans. They're not giving you money. They're giving you something and getting back 100 times that. So, Baba Oshie, what you're saying for us to come together, we're doing that right now. Mm-hmm. With the internet, it brings us together. You and I, we're talking to people on this in my phone. I'm talking to someone in England,
right,
Baba Oshie.
Yeah.
I'm talking to someone in New Mexico on my phone.
Exactly.
That was unheard of when you were boxing for the Golden Gloves.
That's for sure. That's for sure. But no, that's it. The capabilities are there. The thing is, we must utilize that. We must take advantage of that.
Correct.
That must be the way that we are going to communicate and change this dynamic through all these methods, through FaceTime, through Zoom, all of these things.
You know? That's correct.
Yeah.
No, you're, and it is something that we have invented. Because we, as a people, as Africans, have invented numerous things that are being used today, and we have no idea, from the shopping cart to the street light to the internet to the cell phone. So we could keep going on and on, but that's neither here nor there. Because the reality is, like you said, we have to utilize these things and use these things for our sovereignty and use these things so that we can liberate ourselves. And that's what we're doing. And as you see, they're starting to slowly show you a little bit about Burkina Faso on the national news. Very little is coming, but it's coming. Mm-hmm. It's coming. They can't stop it because the breadbasket of the world is Africa. And you, as an American African, you have a homeland. Stop saying, I'm American. You're in America. But you ain't never been American.
And never will.
Do you really want to be associated with the people who created a genocide? Do you really want to be sitting at the feet of a people who didn't think of you as a human being? Do you really want to marry and be in there and convince them that you all right? We always have to prove ourselves to Arugu because for some reason Arugu wants us to believe that we're less than. Mm-hmm. And we're not less than. As a matter of fact, it's not why. I don't ask why you don't like me. I ask why do you fear me? And I say that with inflection, Baba Oshie, and it's a reason I do that, because that's passionate to me. I'm not just saying this because I want people to think, oh, Irv's a tough guy, man. He really showed them white folks. No, that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm not here doing a dance for Caucasians. I think that's why I probably didn't go as far as I could in my chosen profession, because I did not feel as though that I had to prove anything to you. I came out of the womb fighting and kicking and with two strikes against me.
Yeah.
So I didn't need to prove anything to you. And what I need to do is understand how to protect my sisters. See, I'm big. God made me big and strong for a reason, because I'm here to protect my sisters, and not only to educate and to learn, but to protect. Ibrahim Traoré has a gun on his hip every time you see
him. Right.
That's for a reason.
That's
to
right.
Back you up off him.
That's
he ain't
right.
talking about no democracy and no homosexuality and I need a loan. He ain't saying all that. He ain't saying I'm going to run to the – after we get finished, we're going to go see what the bishop say. The bishop is the reason you in your condition. Stop it. That's the reason you're in your condition, because your religion has been weaponized against you.
Exactly. And that's the thing that a lot of our people don't understand and see, because we've been trained to believe, particularly in Christianity as well as Islam, that these are the infallible words and writings and sayings of God, you know?
And
so we don't want to challenge that, because we don't want to go to hell. When you're living in hell.
If the guy under the ground got a red suit on and a spear, and he mean, you should see this one up here we dealing with.
So don't tell me
about some place over yonder. I'm not going, when I get to yonder, I'll get there. But the reality is, you have to do what you've been indoctrinated to do. See, but if you don't know you've been indoctrinated, then you will fall for anything. Mm-hmm. And King said that. If you don't believe in something, you'll fall for anything. And, you know, King was indoctrinated into this Christianity, mm-hmm. and he used it well until he couldn't use it no more, until his Christianity turned on him, as all things do. Mm-hmm. But we as a people have to understand that there's an African way to do things. I'm not saying Africans are the perfect people. Nobody's perfect. Mm-hmm. But let's be clear. If you never know who you are, then you leave this earth in someone else's skin, in your skin, but someone else's mindset. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to do that. I mm-hmm. want to know who I am, where am I from, and where did these things come from? Did the Rugu invent all these things, this man, woman, child, this child in a manger? No, he stole those things. Mm-hmm. Those things were, he didn't come up with all that, but he wants you to believe he did. Yeah.
When you said when you said something about Dr. King, I don't know, my lady, she sent me this piece. The two brothers, along with this Caucasian woman, that were kicked out of the Tennessee legislature, but they got their positions back. And one of them, Justin Jones, is putting forth a motion to honor the radical Dr. King. Because as he's saying, is that when Dr. King died, you know, you neutered him. You made him like milk toast. You know, he had a dream, you know, that my mm-hmm. little kids and your little kids. Dr. King was radical to the time that he was assassinated. Mm-hmm. In fact, as we know, he was labeled the public enemy number one. Labeled public enemy number one because of his advocacy. Yes. You know, so here's a piece of the brother arguing on the Tennessee legislature.
Let's hear.
75% of Americans disapproved of MLK as he spoke out against the war in Vietnam and economic disparity. In fact, Dr. King was kicked out of the Baptist convention. He had to create a whole new progressive Baptist convention because they thought he was too radical. And so let us say today, there's a scripture in the Bible that says, woe to you who build tombs for prophets your ancestors killed. If you were fighting for racial justice, if you're not standing up against militarism, if you're not fighting for the poor and dispossessed, don't act like you love Dr. King. Be consistent. And it is shameful. And Bernice King continues to tell us her father's last sermon was that he was fearful. He was preparing to give a sermon saying why America may go to hell. Because he said, I'm fearful that I'm integrating my people into a burning house. That was his view of America. And so let us honor the radical king, the prophet of justice, the one killed by empire on April 4th, 1968 in this state.
I say.
The brother Ocean.
Yeah.
Burning my people. The metaphor of a burning house
mm-hmm.
is that we're living in hell.
Yes.
This is hell. But this is the thing that got me, what you just played. You're building temples to martyrs that your ancestors killed. Mm-hmm. My God.
Yeah.
My God. That is deep. That is so profound to me. Some things you hear that you get that just goes right through you. That was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been to that Martin Luther King statue in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And they got every milk toast, softball speech he ever did. I want to play with little white children.
Yeah.
And I want to all of them on the wall.
Listen. It's just like when I was in school and those who are my age, and I know us being born in the 50s, I was born in the early 50s, like so many people that I know, those of us who were born in the 50s, we have a great benefit of living through two millenniums, you know.
Right.
And a number of other things that we had that benefit of seeing things happen, the various movements, the civil rights movement, the black power movement, all that kind. We have all those benefits, but the bottom line is, you know, they shouldn't just be romanticized. They should be understood and still acted upon. That's what the bottom line is, you know. And so, you know, Dr. King, in many of his great speeches, he was profound, of course, but he was also very radical. My favorite quote, which I mentioned a couple days ago when his birthday was the 15th, which was this past Wednesday, is the quote that he says, "There's nothing more dangerous," and he's speaking of the mind and the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's speaking to, which is the problem. He said, "There's nothing mm-hmm. more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity."
Mm-hmm.
Breaking it down, he's saying, because you know what the word sincere means? You know, dedicated, mm-hmm. sincerity, committed, mm-hmm. sincere to ignorance. Now, understand something, brother, and I know you know, ignorance is absence of knowledge. Ignorance in itself is not bad. That means you don't know. I don't know quantum physics. But if somebody hips me to quantum physics, that'll eliminate my ignorance to quantum physics. You know? Ignorance is simply absent. It is easy to impart new knowledge, especially if you have a desire, especially if you have a commitment, especially if you truly want to know. You can eliminate that ignorance. And we definitely need to do, because we have been trained to be ignorant.
And indoctrinated, that's correct, mm-hmm. into our ignorance. And Baba Oshi.
And then hold on, let me finish that. Hold on to that.
Go ahead, finish it.
Yeah. And then he's saying conscientious stupidity. That means you are aware your ass is stupid. You want to be, you know, there's a thing that just says, you know, that you don't want to know, because by knowing, you have to change. I don't want to know. I remember I was in a discussion, and this sister said, "No, I don't want you to say nothing, because you're trying to change my mind. I'm thinking this way." She even mentioned, she said, more black people and white people need to have children, so the race thing will be better. I said, whoa, man. So you definitely need your mind altered. You know, but the thing is that a lot of us don't want to know. We don't want to know, because by knowing, our behavior must change. So they rather be blind to the facts. They rather not hear about it, ignoring it. You know, like the little boy holding his ears and going, yeah. You know, that's how we are sometimes. Yeah. So no.
And Baba Oshi, if I may, that's at its primitive state. But what that manifests into is this. Sometimes people hold a core belief that is very strong. And that means you've been indoctrinated into something that's very strong, like your Christianity or whatever it is that you believe. And when they are presented with the evidence that works against that belief, the new evidence will not be accepted. Think about that, Bob Oshie. Mm-hmm. I got evidence. I got, like, Dr. Henry Clark, Dr. Ben. I have the evidence right mm-hmm. here. You wrote this. Mm-hmm. It's right here. This is the evidence.
Right.
But you will not accept it. And it will create a feeling mm-hmm. that is extremely uncomfortable for you.
That's right.
Now you're, I don't want to hear that. Because it's called cognitive dissonance.
That's right.
And because it is so important to protect that core belief, mm-hmm. they will mm-hmm. rationalize ignorant and even deny anything that doesn't fit in with their core belief.
That's right.
Think about these white folks you're dealing with now. They will rationalize and ignore. You see a guy on TV with handcuffs on, they beat him up, and he dies. They ignore that. Oh, well, police just doing their job. They feared for their life. It was six of y'all, and he had handcuffs on.
Mm-hmm.
What was you in fear of again? But you won't accept that, because you've been indoctrinated to believe something, and you're not going to accept the truth. And that's where some American Africans are. Mm-hmm. Look, I got a big house.
Yes.
I got a car. My hair look like white folks. I got jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
What else? What more do I need? Until you need a pint of blood, or until you need a lung.
Yeah, I got mine.
Come on, then. Mm-hmm. Come on. Come on now. I heard this, and I'm going to stop. I heard this in school when I came up. My teacher would say this to me. These are black women. Mm-hmm. I got mine. You got yours to get. Mm. That was supposed to motivate me.
Yeah.
See, because that's what they learned in church. If you don't do what you do, you're going to hell and burn forever. Mm-hmm. Scared the hell out you. And this is where American Africans are living now. They're living in fear. Mm-hmm. I know I feared losing my job. I feared losing my pension. I feared my children wouldn't be able to have a place to stay and things of that. Fear is what moves people to where you want them to be. So that's why when you look at Africa and see Burkina Faso and Chad and Nigeria, they're not afraid.
That's right.
They're not aware.
They're moving without fear. I love them. Yeah.
I keep going back to that, Bob Oshie, because that is inspiring me. That is making me making me read more. It's getting me to talk to more people. And I keep bringing it up because everyone needs to know about this. These brothers are over there putting their life on the line for their people, for their race, for their country, for what they – where are they going to run to? Where are we going to go? It's like these Gazan people, these people, these Palestinians, they can't go back to Gaza. Gaza's gone. They tore that up. Instead of y'all standing there fighting, y'all ran. You move. You let these people move you. And what Africa is saying right now is we're not moving anywhere. We're not going anywhere, and you got to get the hell up out of here. Because in Congo, the national language is French, and that's changing. It's changed in Burkina Faso. They changed that French is not the national language, and they're going to change the money. So this is very important what you're saying, Baba Oshie. I'm telling you, because it morphs into something else. If you don't understand what King went through, you don't understand what Muhammad Ali went through, then you need to go find out what they went through, because that makes you who you are when you see that others have done this. It ain't nothing new under the sun.
Right.
I'm not doing it. I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before.
That's right.
But why I am saying it, because I want someone to hear me. Mm-hmm. And then you make sense of it. You make sense of what I'm saying. Does it make any sense to be an African? Does it make any sense to have a homeland? Does it make any sense to be your own person and have your own self, you have self-determination and not live in a constant state of individualism, but to live in to be collective. And if my brother's in trouble, I'm in trouble. If you messing with him, you messing with me, because that's what Burkina Faso said. And I saw how they said, if you mess with Chad, you mess with me.
Ashe.
You mess with Nigeria, you mess with me.
Ashe.
You mess with Baba Oshie, you mess with me.
Ashe. Same
Come
here,
on, brother. Brother.
Right.
We have to have a stance of revolution and a mindset of revolution in order for us to get our sovereignty and to have a mindset of self-determination, because that's a mindset.
Yeah,
that's a mindset. You can't see it and touch it, but you can feel it when you know I have that behind me. Probably we should get somebody else.
All right, man. Well, the change is there. All right.
Yes,
hey, Baba, how you doing? Baba Butch, how are you, sir?
Y'all need to write this stuff down, man. You need to put this on, put it in the book. You need to write a journal for your kids, your grandkids, your great grandkids, because you're not going to be here forever. Everything you're saying is on point. Did Paul speak yet from England? Did Paul speak?
No, Paul hasn't been on yet.
Okay,
no.
But y'all need to write this stuff down. What's his name? Irving?
Yeah,
Irv. What's his brother's name?
Yeah, Irv Lewis.
Irv, all this talking, you need to put it in a book, because you're not going to be here to talk 30 years from now. You understand what I'm saying? Nobody's paying no attention. Dr. Ben, John Henry Clark, Ivan Van Surde, they all wrote books for us now, because they're long gone.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. If you want the people around the world and the Africans, because they don't know what's going on here, we don't know what's going on there. We all know we got a problem. You understand?
Yeah.
But you need to talk, write, talk. When you ain't talking, you're writing. Dedicated to your grandson. I don't give a damn who you're dedicated to.
No, it's our future, brother. I agree. I agree, Baba Butch. I understand what you're saying.
And stay healthy. Stay healthy. Stay in touch. You got to stay. I'll be 84 in March.
Ashe, man.
I done been around a complete circle. You need to write. Stop talking so fucking much.
I love it, brother.
That's all I got to tell you, man. Stay strong. Right.
All right, Baba Butch.
Yes.
All right.
All right.
No, not, hey, been saying it now for a few years, man.
You know, yeah, I can't push back on him. He's right. He's right on point.
Yeah. Hey, what's up? What's up, Jay? How you doing?
Hey, what's happening, OG? Hey, listen, man. What's going on with your two sisters? Where you at, man? That let that cracker Giuliani off the hook, man. They had him, man. They could have just did him. They could have just did him like the white man would have just did them if he had the chance and the opportunity. But it seems like they done let that cracker off the hook, man. Unbelievable.
What is this again?
They could have had everything that cracker owned.
What is
but
this?
But for some reason, they don't want them to deprave him no more. They let the devil off the hook, or maybe somebody decided to give him $20 million and said, let's leave this white man from being destitute.
Who are you talking about, Giuliani?
It's amazing.
Giuliani.
Talking about Giuliani? Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, they left the devil off the hook. Why did Negro gotta always be so loving towards the crack?
It's that training. They should have had no empathy because he didn't have none for them. No sympathy, no empathy at all. Whatever the verdict was, that's what it is. Bring it. Give it up.
Well, you see, the reality is our people don't understand that equation. Like I said, one of the greatest quotes ever written, the Negro who wrote it and said it, changed his mind over the years. Hakeem Olajuwon, the Negro made the greatest quote to me, the one that brought me into consciousness, the white man is your perpetual enemy. But he changed his mind in regards to that. And even told me so. And I can't think of another statement that's been more influencing the way I think about the cracker than that right there. The white man is your perpetual enemy. And I heard that quote, I would say maybe 30-some years ago. Mm-hmm. And he ain't done a damn thing since I read the quote to change my mind. If anything, he's just gotten better at what he do.
Yeah.
How could you write a quote like that and then over the years decide that quote is no longer true? I would just like to know one thing. What have you done to make you change your mind? Because I can't think of nothing that he's done to make me change my mind. I'm 10 toes down on the fact that he's the evil of the world. There's nothing else. You can't name me one place on the planet. One place on the planet where people have been living among themselves in harmony that he ain't came in they midst and just tore shit up. There's no place in the world. You can't name me one place where people have been living amongst themselves in harmony and he done came into the room and they just tore shit up and took over, killed the people, raped the people, robbed the people, did it all. Can you think of one place on the planet?
I can't. In terms of European expansionism, European colonization, you know, when they came out of that medieval age, dark age, and so forth, where we, as the Moors in the western part of Europe, you know, taught them how to get them damn animals out of their goddamn castle and put them in the corral. How to wash your ass.
How to wash their ass.
Yep. I mean,
you
damn.
Can't name me one place. And whenever you ask a white man that question, he can't even name you no place. Because it ain't never happened. But no, we love him.
No, what he's consistently have done when he's ventured off and he brought with him the three D's, death, domination, or destruction.
All three.
Yep. Death, domination, and destruction. And so, you know, really, you know, I know we talk about the European in this way. And I know there are some of us that don't like that. There are some of us that you always talking about the white man, this, you know, to me, he's the crux of the problem. But the bottom line is, it is our responsibility. It is our duty to get ourselves up out of this. Us as a person, and then us, more importantly, collectively, to get up out of this and to open the minds and hearts of our people, to help them understand that this is who we need to be. This is who we need to embrace ourselves, a love of us ourselves, you know?
Do you know one of the greatest things to witness right now is what's going on in Burkina Faso?
Of course, yeah.
What that brother is doing?
Yes.
I pray every day for him, brother.
I do. Every day. I know Irv does. Pray for his protection.
What he's doing is what we as Africans should be doing and upholding.
Yes.
I mean, from what I understand, he's taking the assets from the cracker and not spending it on himself and those that surround him, but he's spending it on the people. Mm-hmm. What's the greatest thing an African leader could do? To be honest with you, I can't even think of an African leader who has done that, who has taken from the white man, the French or whatever the hell they are or want to call themselves, and given it to the people. I mean, if you think about it, if Baby Doc Devalier had did that in Haiti.
Or Papa Doc, more importantly.
Papa Doc,
yeah.
We wouldn't be in this condition. Yeah. If Mandela did it in South Africa,
yeah,
South Africa would be better than it is now. And
you got
black people who rave about certain parts of South Africa.
But the reality is,
what the brother's doing in Burkina Faso, I just pray for him every day. That's who you should be praying to,
right?
Instead of the white man, because he's showing you he's your God. Anytime you take from someone that's as destructive and evil and vicious as the French and give it to the people, you God.
Hey, I hear you. All right, Jay.
Let me just leave you with this, Hoshi. The Ravens for your brother Herb may be in trouble this weekend.
No.
But we'll see.
No. The Ravens are going to win. And I wouldn't be surprised if Washington Commanders beat Kansas City in Kansas City. I wouldn't be surprised. I ain't saying they will.
I thought what you call it was playing Texas.
Oh, yes, that's right. Not the Commanders. No, they're playing Texas. I apologize. It's the American Conference. So, yeah.
Jay.
Yes.
Bob Oger, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? But Jay was doing all right until he said that. But anyway, let me say this to you. Nelson Mandela was never the president. And I'm going to tell you why. A president has an army. Ibrahim Traore is a president. He has an army. Donald Trump has an army. Where was Mandela's army? There was none. That was all smoke and mirrors.
Yeah.
His Reconciliation Act that he did. I looked into Nelson Mandela.
Yeah.
Loved the brother.
Loved him.
When he was radical, when he was fighting apartheid.
Right.
But that they broke that brother. And look, you put me in jail 27 years, I'm going to come out doing a dance too. Don't get it twisted. But don't let them use you. Let them use you to keep your people in the dark.
You know,
that's what I saw.
You know, I always say, whoever has control of the military, and have control of the money. They in control. So you can be, you can have all the dark faces and high places you want, but that's who's in control. You know, I got to run, family.
It's over.
Yeah.
Hold up, my brother.
Hold up. Have a good weekend, family. Have a good weekend, Jay. Brother Irv, love you, man. Appreciate you, man. Have
love
a good
you too,
weekend.
Man.
All right. Have a good weekend. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful weekend. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahodie. A Bibi Fahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Peace.
Great show, Bob Oshie.